All right. Let's just dive in. Ladies and gentlemen, blocka. Welcome back, all our listeners. This is the Transatlantic Bridge, connecting you know where to you know where. Seriously, Stockholm, connecting to Harlem, the United States to Sweden, but also the world at large. This is the podcast called This Moment. I am Jason Diakite. As a rapper, I go by the name Timbuktu, and I'm here as always with my dear brother, superstar chef Marcus Samuelson, now also a name that is on the lips of every person in Sweden that I meet. Marcus, it's crazy over here, man.
Yeah, man. I mean, you knew about Busporet way before I knew about it, and you were the one that said, hey, we should go and do this. And I had so much fun. Can you explain for American listeners, what is Busporet?
Busporet. Busporet means on track. So it's a game show, like a quiz show, kind of like Jeopardy or something like that, where the premise of the show is that, so there are two teams competing against each other, two teams of two people in each team. So it was Marcus and I, it was you and I, Marcus, against one of Sweden's top
political
TV journalists, does like hardcore political analysis, was the Swedish National Broadcasting Corporation's correspondent in the United States. So it's like big job. And her teammate, Marcus Oscarsson, so her name was Carina Bergfeldt, and Marcus Oscarsson, her teammate, is for the other big, the biggest private network. He was the correspondent to the United States for them. So like two hardcore journalists.
Sure.
And then cut to the chef and the rapper. Yes. Right. So the premise for the show is that you're supposed to guess where you get a series of clues and you're supposed to guess on a city. So on track means basically you're riding a train and your destination is a city. You don't know which city it is. And they give you all these very kind of enigmatic, kind of riddle, tricky wordplay clues on where you're going. And if you can guess at the first level, you get 10 points. Then it gets a little easier. You get 8 points, then 6 points, 4 points. It's 2 points or zero. So anyway, Marcus and I, we did our first episode. It aired just recently. And the weird thing, all right, so Sweden is 10 million people that live in Sweden. 3 million people look at this show.
A third.
Like it's aired a third of the country's population, like probably more than half of the adult population look at this. It's on Friday nights, 8 o'clock. Everybody's there. I hadn't even realized what being on that show means and what that impact feels like. But I can say this, I'm feeling it now because everywhere I go, at the airport, at the train station, on the bus, in the cafe, people are coming up to me like, it was so fantastic. Oh my God, you guys just like killed him. And Marcus, he's so happy, his energy. It was incredible to see. He celebrated each point that you guys got. Like you guys brought so much energy to the show. It was much more exciting because this is usually, guys, this is usually, I would say like a stuffy show, but it's like very kind of low key.
Serious. Yeah.
People are very, serious. Like, and Marcus, you just came in there like, hey, what's this, guys? Yeah. Okay, let's go. And then you were like, yay!
You want to be Cameroon in the World Cup. That's the goal. Like every year at the World Cup, there's always an African team that I'm rooting for. So you go listen to be Cameroon in the World Cup. You might
want to go do
it.
This one.
Exactly.
Yeah. You want to be doing this type of stuff.
Next time. Yes.
Yeah.
But it was fun. And I have to say, I was so impressed with the music because there's a lot of pop culture quiz, but they also have an incredible band, each time different bands. And the way they're kind of mixing up two songs at the same time, but that setup for me was very, very impressive. And I just had fun, man. It was in my hometown in Gothenburg.
You brought, exactly. It's recorded in a studio in Gothenburg, but you brought so much energy to the Swedish people, Marcus. And I tell you, people are really excited about that, you know.
But did your father watch it though?
My dad did not watch it. It's like, I'm sorry, man. It doesn't matter that, like, you, okay, you were on. I told him, yeah, did you see the TV show? It's like, oh no, what TV show? I was like, Postol. I don't know. I didn't see that, you know.
You know what I love about her? He's consistent. He's very
consistent. And it's not like, it's not a problem for him. Like, no. It's a problem for you. You didn't see it, but like, but I think people are coming up telling him about it because he did, like, he was like, I heard, you know, that you and Marcus were on this thing and did really well.
The other thing that was fun about being home with hanging with you was that I got a chance to see you live performing in Gothenburg, and I love the new band
Masaka Trio. Under 30 Esther Kirabo and Masaka Trio, under 30 jazz band, jazz singer.
But that
I'm
amazing.
So happy that you got to experience
with your, I mean, the show is really dope. So you know, it's
thank you,
it's,
brother.
It needs to be in an intimate setting because it really requires listening. Do you know what I mean? And the audience does probably 50% of sort of like, if they're not into it, it doesn't work. So it's a very intimate show.
No.
You know?
And it's actually made for, I mean, contrary to playing at festivals and so forth, where you want, you know, movement from the audience. You want them to like feel another vibe. And you know, usually when I play, it's like way higher volume. It's like a nine-piece band with horns and so forth. So it's a whole different, like, energy level.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
One of my favorite things in Sweden too was in between we were shooting, you know, all the other guys, they were like studying. And I'm like, studying what? You don't know what the question's going to be. But Jason and I was also studying. We were studying music. Jason showed me this. You showed me this incredible clip of James Brown in Paris. Mm-hmm. I want to say 1967.
At the Olympia. 1967, brother.
And the song is only 8.5 minutes. can you just like take us there? Because it's for me, it's like, I love spending time with you, but like when we talk about music, and I try to like not bring up music too much with you because you're in music all day, but it was gems like that when I was just like, I don't want to be anywhere else. We don't even have to go out and do the show. Just show me the next clip. And we're just sitting and we're having so much fun, whether we're like 15 or middle age, you know, and everybody else.
It takes us right back to like, you know, like being a teenager and just like listening to stuff, the joy of just kind of discovering things. I mean, this is obviously music I've heard many, 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 many times, but there's still that kind of sense of like discovery and also realizing that these are my teachers.
You know, to understand Black excellence and brilliance, it's not linear, right? And I think to see it and hear it through James Brown and Prince are two sort of like incredible ways to watch it because they're clearly genius, right? Both very similar, very, but also very different. But in James Brown world, because it's so much before Prince, so much of pop culture, what you see today, really stems from James Brown. And what happens very often is with Black icons, you know, they entertain for a long time and a lot of stuff happens. And we remember maybe just the drug part or just the crazy part. But James Brown, that, you know, I don't think pop culture would be today the way it would be without James Brown.
No way, man. No James Brown, no Prince. No Prince, no D'Angelo. Mm. No D'Angelo, let's see, no...
Well, Andre is also completely Andre 3000.
Yeah. No, everybody was shaken out of James Brown's coat, basically. Mm. Michael Jackson, Prince, he's kind of the godfather, not only of soul, not only of funk, but of the way of modern kind of musical entertainment on stage, you know, like going on a stage with a band or a DJ. Wow. All of that stems from like his dance moves, just the dance moves themselves. And we have just the drum beats themselves, the way the guitar is playing, you know, that's also at the same, you know, while James Brown is at the peak of his career, he's also inspiring, you know, Lee Scratch Perry in Jamaica and Bunny Wailer and Bob Marley.
And goes to West Africa.
Yeah. And is inspiring Fela Kuti. Mm-hmm. Like at the same time, they're doing their interpretations of what they're hearing coming out of the United States.
That's my point about blackness. You have to understand it. This is way before internet, and this is way before MTV. So, you know,
that is the black CNN right there.
Exactly.
Like he's broadcasting. Yeah. Like he's sending out a message of energy, of vibe, of communication to the world and the people that hear him. Fela in Lagos, you know, Bunny Wailer in Kingston,
but it's
in England and
unapologetically, right? And it's so different because when you think about traditional pop culture, we think about it almost like institutions. How many Grammy did you win? How many number one hits did you have? You know what I mean? And when you think about someone like James Brown, you can almost throw all of that context out because it's not real.
Hey, man, James Brown owned radio stations.
What? Channels?
He owned radio stations. James Brown was the first, to my knowledge. Now, I haven't, and I don't have my computer in front of me, so I can't Google it and double check it. He was the first black entertainer, black musician, artist to own his own jet plane.
Yeah. Yep, yep.
He had his own private jet, you know, like way before Drake, man. Like, you know, like it's just, and this is at a time where, I mean, 1967, where the clip that we saw of James Brown playing at the Olympia Theater in Paris, when that was recorded, that's the same year that marriage between a black person and a white person in 17 states of the United States had just been made legal.
Voting
rights, 2 years old. The Civil Rights Act is 3 years old. Mm-hmm. Voting Rights Act is 2 years old. You know, at that time, at this time, and I mean, not only is James Brown unapologetic in his artistry, and so pioneering and cutting edge, but he's also unapologetically black, you know, you know, asking for no invitation. He's just,
I was on my park yesterday with my son, and I heard three biggest songs I've never heard. And it was amazing.
Really?
And it was just amazing to hear, like, and the dude was like, yo, these songs never got released. And it was just amazing because you know Biggest Voice as soon as it comes on. Mm-hmm. And it's just like you feel like you've heard everything because, you know, it's 25 years ago now. Mm-hmm. And obviously New York plays all the time. And I was like, yo, isn't this Biggie? He's like, yep. They never got released. And this is just in the park pumping. And I was like, wow. And I stopped my son's eye and I was like, yo, this is Biggie, you know, one of the biggest lyricists of all time. And he's like, exactly. All right, I want to continue to play. But, you know, for me, it's like, what? There's stuff.
There you go. Dear transatlantic listeners, one clear difference. You'll never hear Biggie Smalls in a park in Stockholm.
Hidden shit,
you
though.
Might,
hidden shit.
You might. Yeah, hidden shit, too. Yeah. Like, unreleased stuff.
Yes.
You won't hear that, like, if you want to hear unreleased Biggie, you got to hang out in parks in New York City, not in Stockholm.
Yeah. But speaking about originality, I think, and I'm very, there's two things I want to big you up for. So, you know, you got to take it. First of all,
I'm going to take it, brother.
Congrats to the U.S. launch of One Drop of Midnight. You know, just saw that. So that's amazing. I know you've been working on it for a long time and it just got launched. And I'm also super excited because in this spring, you're going to launch the show here on Harlem Stage with A Drop of Midnight. And what I love about the show is that what you were aiming for was actually to present something that was highly original, you know, and that's probably my favorite thing about the whole show, that you really try to present something that was not, you could have just gone up there, done your top seven songs, read from the book, and people would have had a great night out, but you really try to sort of tell a journey. So when is it going to be on Harlem Stage?
So A Drop of Midnight is a book that I wrote, came out in Sweden in 2016, came out in English recently, right actually at the beginning of the pandemic, was re-released again now. And I turned that into a stage performance, kind of fusing a reduction of the book story. So kind of the bare bones of the book story. And I tell that story set to music. Both music that I've written together with the composer Erik Jaffe, and to some classic jazz and gospel music, and some blues, and to tell the story about my family's journey from rural South Carolina to Harlem and then to Sweden, basically, and where that has left me, how it has shaped me, how that legacy has affected what I want to pass on to my daughter and to my son, who's due in 4 months.
Big up.
And just pass on to BIPOC people worldwide, basically. Anybody who has, like you and myself, who have roots that branch into different continents, countries, classes, and colors, who have stories that are not linear, that are non-normative, who have their feet planted in soil of different kinds, you know, a celebration of identity crisis, turning identity crisis into identity wealth, really. And that's what the story, bottom line, is about. How I went from feeling like, from feeling half to realizing that I was double.
That's amazing. And we need work. I mean, that's like both you and I going to have a little one in spring of 22. Maya and I just announced Great Ethiopia.
New baby year. Yeah. New baby year.
And even the way we...
What's that? You just announced...
That we're going to have a little Grace Ethiopia. That's going to be our name.
Grace Ethiopia.
And,
yes,
you know,
sir.
And we wanted to be very clear about, you know, obviously Ethiopia has gone through a very, very tough 12 to 16 months. And
it still is.
It still is. And Maya and I both want to associate it with something positive and beautiful. So that, therefore, Grace Ethiopia. And, you know, for
that's
us.
That's a beautiful name.
Thank you. But for us, you know, the whole point with, you know, Zion and Maxis and the next generation is I want to leave work that is meaningful, right? So when they go and discover and then find the curiosity, they find that they can read A Drop of Midnight and see themselves. Obviously not the same story, but different story, right? But there are mirror images of that. And I feel like that's like my whole work with food is that African origin food should be on the same parallel universe, held on the same high level as French and European food, right? So anytime I'm on a news or anytime I'm doing anything in the public, I want to bring in dawa dawa, cholof, berbere, mitmita, because it took me a lifetime to learn about, you know, all the French duxelles and all the beautiful truffles and all the terms that we learned, right? So those were tongue twisters to us too. So for me, it's really important as an ambassador in the field to bring in all kinds of African narrative words into the same level as we learned about risotto. Mm.
So you could get sauce yassa to be as world renowned as beurre blanc. Basically.
Yes, of course. And we lost. And I think it takes creatives to do this. So obviously, music is probably the best way where Africa and Black culture has really shown that, right? But then you think about brilliance and excellence is everywhere, right? If you think about in fashion, right? We just lost an icon, right? Think about what Virgil brought into it.
Speak, brother.
Virgil really brought in the connectivity between Ghana, Africa, street, and highest end of fashion. In parallel universe, right?
And not just fusing art, activism,
yes.
music into fashion.
Yes.
Meaning that, you know, a piece designed or created by Virgil Abloh was telling a story, a story that was beyond a look, you know, that was beyond surface, a story that had meaning, that had symbolism, that had roots, that had identity. I was speaking to a friend of mine, Angelo da Silveira, who has a beautiful brand called Dimond, which is a Black-owned fashion house in Sweden. Not very many of those, I'll tell you. Yeah. This might be the only one in Sweden.
Yeah.
And I asked him about, you know, how did Virgil Abloh's passing hit you? And said it was heavy, man. I mean, he was pulled before his time, 41 years old. You know, it's really sad for his family. Mm-hmm. He had two small children and a wife. But he said that the amount of doors that Virgil Abloh kicked in at such a young age, he said, those doors are now kicked in. He literally said that, you know, he's like, that day when I'm in a meeting pitching to Volvo, I can reference Virgil Abloh having done that with Maybach, you know, or having done that with like designing jet planes.
Yeah.
So those doors are kicked in. And he was like, he kicked in so many doors in such a short time with his creative mind. And now his example is something that this generation and future generations can lean on and say, well, he did it. And listen to how I want to take that and take it one step further. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like Obama kicked in the door to the Oval Office.
Yeah.
You know, before Obama, nobody could even conceive of the possibility of a person of color holding the highest office in the United States, the most powerful position politically in the world. But after Obama, we know it's possible. And you know that there's a kid or several kids out there that saw that and who are on their way to the Oval Office. They're not there yet, but they're on their way, Marcus. You don't know who it is, but they'll show themselves. Okay.
And it's possible. But I also think with Virgil, to stay with that for a moment, because I really think he, first of all, redefined what it meant to be an artist. So he could work in fashion, but he could also do a sculpture, and he could also be an architect and a designer, right? So it wasn't that he wanted to stay in one pocket. He could also come and set and DJ, right? And I just love that idea, right? That identity. But then also, if you think about Off-White, his brand that he started, and had sit on the creative, you know, the highest level of Louis Vuitton, and he made Louis Vuitton, so that little thing became more, that wasn't the little thing, that was a big idea, right? But the fact that Off-White made Louis Vuitton relevant, right?
So again, I see made the it links cool.
with hip-hop, right? That thing that was started, that people looked at, that will never become something, is today pop culture. And I do think there is something about Virgil's energy being unapologetic, linking the street culture, linking Africa, walking it all the way into the boardroom, but also showing there is commerce there. There's jobs to be had. There are brilliant designers that we're not calling designers yet, right? but there are designers. Mm-hmm. And Virgil, for me, represented all of that. And when I if I drive in Jamaica or in Africa and you see the road food, for me, that's just as good as the food in a high posh restaurant. And they don't even see themselves as chefs, but there are chefs. Just like you, when if you see a griot in the corner in Senegal, or when you go to Africa, that guy might not even think of himself as a lyricist.
As an artist.
As an artist, but he truly is. So I think it's up to ambassadors locally and nationwide and worldwide, like ourselves, to actually to bring that to the forefront. So anytime I'm on any type of media platform, right? So for example, if I'm on Swedish TV, I'm bringing the African designer in the room. Why wouldn't
You did.
Postbog. Of course, we have to.
You brought it to Postbog. Yeah. So, you brought it to people's living rooms.
So those are the type of things that I think we sit up. Mm. You can always ask yourself, right? If you're of the diaspora, what can I do? I might be a teacher, or I might only speak to this community. Bring it, whatever that is, whatever auntie made, whatever your unk made, bring it, whatever that is, because it needs to shift, you know?
And Virgil Abloh also, you know, continues in that long tradition of Black cool, having brought coolness, you know, like talked about James Brown or Nina Simone or Lauryn Hill or Prince or... you know, all our heroes, the pioneers, the foremothers and forefathers, the ancestors that brought cool to the world. Miles Davis, you know, Charlie Parker.
Mystique, too.
Ma Baker, mystique and cool. And that's what Virgil brought to Louis Vuitton. I mean, really, I don't own any Vuitton because, well, I just don't, you know. I don't have it in me to really spend money in that way on for those type of things. But for those who do and who that means a lot to, totally reformed what that, you know, brand, I think, means and looks and feels. And now it feels cool from having made, you know, luggage and, I don't know, in-the-box clothing to something totally much more relevant and with deeper meaning. You know, we salute you, Virgil Abloh. Rest in power. You know, Chadwick Boseman, Biz Markie, Shock G, Black Rob, help me fill in the gaps here, Marcus. We've had so many people that passed this year. We salute you. We salute you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This is the summer to expand your horizons. It's time to explore. But before you set foot out the door, set foot in the ultimate lightweight, super packable travel shoes from Allbirds. Find your perfect pair at Allbirds.com. That's Allbirds.com.
Jason, where would you be? I know if hip hop wouldn't come and grab you circa 1989, 1990, where would you, what direction would you head in? Can you answer that?
Hard to say, man. hard to say. I would say maybe, I would be some form of, I'd be working in journalism or something maybe not too far from what my work looks like today. That is, I don't know, either journalism or somehow, maybe not, because hip hop was really what made me, that's how I learned to stand on stage in front of people and, you know, meet people's eyes and transfer that energy from the audience back into myself and back to them. So I think hip hop really taught me that. So I don't know if I'd be doing anything that was like in the public eye, the way my work as an artist has kind of placed me today, but I think I'd definitely be writing in some way. So I'd say probably journalism, writing reportage or writer, you know.
No, I see that.
Maybe poet.
Yeah, I see that.
But maybe, you know, maybe lawyer, maybe civil rights lawyer. I don't know. I have no idea. Maybe I'd be standing, washing the dishes, way down the line at Aquavit. Mm-hmm. Who knows?
You know, the only thing is, though, that level of
Could be dead and in jail, you know, or dead or in jail. That's also seriously a possibility.
No, but also that level of joy that you bring that really comes. I mean, in many ways, hip hop raised you. You show up on time. It was one of the, you know, you bring the band together and there's a level of joy and commitment to the craft because you're really into it. You're really deeply passionate about it.
But it also gave me it helped me kind of create the tools and the kind of inner strength to say, you know, I am somebody. Like, I have something. You know, I have something to offer. I have worth, you know.
No doubt.
I was listening to KRS-One, and if you ever, like next time we get together in a room, Marcus, we'll go onto YouTube and we'll listen to KRS-One. There are lots of lectures that he's given, like other than all the amazing music that he's created. He was saying that value is not, true value is not the things that you own. It's not how much you can earn for what you have to offer. He said, true value is who you are and how you manage when you have nothing.
Yeah.
You know, it's being able to, the true value is basically being able to manage. It's like, how low can you go? Yeah. Being able to manage with nothing. Mm-hmm. Like, how can you handle that? And how do you manage that? How do you navigate that?
I think for me, I mean, without food, I think I really struggled to know where I would be because, you know, food really disciplined me. It held me accountable to myself in terms of the craft, right? It humbles me, but it's also the one thing I always run towards to learn more. So that, you know, as a Black kid in Sweden, as you know, in Sweden, there's a saying, don't think you are somebody, but I am somebody. Right?
Exactly.
And we go back and forth with this as Black kids because it's so clear that we are someone, right? Of course, everyone is somebody, but...
Well, you mean it's so clear that the system and structures in place are created to kind of instill you with the sense that you aren't somebody or don't...
Strip you out.
Of whatever somebody-ness.
Yeah, don't stick out in a crowd. Don't do this. And we are already standing out. And for me, what food gave me is this endless puzzle that I know I can never solve the puzzle, right? I'm just not. I can study all my life. But what I can do is to leave a couple of clues to the next generation so we're a little bit better off. It's a little bit more equal. There's a little more people in the room that feel they're a part of food, right? It will never be perfect. And there's so many different ways to enter food. You can do it through activism. You can do it through an aid system. You can do it through fine dining. You can do it through street food. It's all food, right? You can do it through spirituality. And that's, for me, it's like, there will always be new songs written, right? That you can guarantee that. and there will always be new food created. And so it's a puzzle for me that I can never solve. And I love that because I know I need to have this endlessness running towards this. Otherwise, I don't trust myself what I would do without food. I could easily run towards, I have a lot of energy and easily could have folded that into negative energy. You know what I mean? But food always gave me positive energy, you know, and my heroes. And I had, you know, the story of music that I could always kind of just
follow. It was your yellow brick road. It was your North Star. Yeah. It was your identity. And in that sense, it becomes like an extra parent or an older sibling or a guide and a prophet and basically something to live for, a reason to get up in the morning, a reason to do your very best, a reason to be nervous, stand on your toes, a reason to say, okay, I'm going to take this money that I earned and go to Austria and just spend time there until I have a reason to study, a reason to learn.
It's amazing you say that.
Curiosity.
Yeah. I mean, I felt, I mean, without never met him, I felt like Basquiat was like my older brother. I was like, who is this person? Who's this guy? Basically just like, you know, 8 years older than me or whatever. And it's like, he made it in the art world when I didn't know anything or anybody that looked like us that could navigate through the art world. Like, who is this guy? And it's so unorthodox. And what's up with his hair? And all of these things, right? That was like, I need to go to New York.
Yeah, and who said this is a painting?
Yeah.
Right?
Just question everything, right? And I'm like, whatever he's doing, I need to like track it. You know what I mean? So that, I really, when you talk about an older brother, I felt like that. You know what I mean? And when I met his family, you know, they were just laughing at me because it's the first thing I said to the cuz. It's like, yo, we're cousins because I've known you forever. And they're like, what are you talking about? And that's how I felt. You know what I mean?
But tell me, how did you meet the family? Where were you? How did you meet them?
Just for cooking. You know, I get invited to these things that I cook for. And, you know, some things I just cook for. And I specifically did this because I would meet Basquiat's family. And and just wanted to tell.
Some of the gigs you've had, brother.
Yeah.
The gigs you've had.
That's like, a different episode.
You did your thing. Hey, man. It's a different episode. But, you know, and you started, you know, from your grandmother Helga teaching you how to make meatballs or how to mash potatoes, how to, you know, to you doing, practicing your art in the White House.
The next year,
you know, or for Basquiat's family or in Christchurch, you know, in Christchurch, you know, saying no more about Christchurch, but just, you know, to the other end of the world, to Singapore, to Hong Kong,
South Africa.
Malmo. South Africa.
I did feel like when I was cooking for Desmond Tutu and stuff like that, I did. That was like a moment for me that I felt it. But Jason, next year, we're going to do this moment in Miami for Art Basel because I just feel like I was just there.
Were you there this year?
Yeah. And I met all the artists and everything. But I was like, damn, Jason needs to be there. I just felt like,
I'm kind of like your cousin from the country, but I was always confused. I thought Art Basel was in Switzerland, you know?
I mean, I couldn't understand. The OG, though. Okay.
Yes. Because I couldn't get one and one together. It's like people are talking about Art Basel. I'm like, yeah, but they're talking about something in like Switzerland. Like, what is this? And then I was seeing pictures from Miami. Yeah. Not this year, because by now I knew, but we're talking several years back. I was always very
No, that's the original. You're doing it right. You're going to the OG. Mm-hmm. But it was fun. And it's always, you learn about new creativity. We did an event with Derek Adams and the incredible artist, Derek Adams. He did a talk at the restaurant and it's always fun people, you know, shout out to Venus Williams came through and just a bunch of people in the art world.
I need to see that room. I need to see the dining room at Red Rooster Miami. I need to see that Kara Walker mural live, man. Because that's so heavy, so heavy.
Well, we're doing Walker's it there next really, year, so. So
really spoke to me, man. The few times I've had the privilege to be in the same room as her art pieces. But
last question.
Yeah, and another thing that we have to continue discussing in 2022 is when there's so many songs that have been written now. There's so many genres and ways to play songs that have been written. There's so many dishes that have been cooked. There's so many fusions of different culinary traditions that have been remixed and remade. Like, how do you remain or find originality? How do you find, like, if you were young Chef Marcus, 19 years old today, and I was young Jason, aspiring MC, 19 years old today, how would we find our own voice? What would that voice sound like? When there's this, you know, because we grew up, we who grew up most of our, you know, youth in the pre-internet world, where if I found out that Public Enemy or Boogie Down Productions had released a new album, especially living in Sweden, I had to wait a couple of months until either somebody had been to the United States and brought a cassette tape or a record back, or until it was for sale at the local record shop in my little town. Then I had to save my money to get it. If I couldn't, I would just go to the record store every day and listen to my favorite tracks until I knew them by heart. But today, with, you know, everything is a few clicks away, the music, the food, the what do you call it?
Any experience,
basically. The how to. You go onto YouTube. How do I make a cheese souffle? Mm-hmm. It's on YouTube. Like, you can learn it. A lot of mystery. It's very demystified today. Like, how do you find originality in that?
But it
that's
is,
something I'd
but
like
it
to
is,
speak,
but it is, right? On. Because nothing beats do, right? Like, I always say, like, you know, when you pull up in Tokyo and you go to a fish market, the smell, like, I'm sorry, YouTube can't translate that, right? The conversations, although I don't understand the language, but you know it's about picking the best seafood, right? So you're surrounded with people that have one goal, is to pick the best seafood. And that's the energy, that's the respect. So whenever that gets on a plate, you know the work ethic and why it's so, you know, priced in a certain way and respected, right? So for me, I feel like you got to balance this. I have everything on my phone available, but nothing beats do. Like, if I would be 19 today, I would go to Lagos. I would go pull up with my chef, Michael, and I would study original in West Africa. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of stuff coming. Like, there is a cuisine that's going to come out of Africa now that is mixed with Chinese, because obviously Chinese has been in Africa for 20 years, which means that there's an Ethiopian Chinese, there's Nigerian Chinese, there's a, do you know what I mean? And these will not become small cuisines, these will become world cuisines, you know what I mean? So that's something, that's why for me, it's not about following whatever someone teaches you in school. It's like, learn the craft, then get the hell out and just study yourself, you know? And create things with your friends that you guys are into, whether that five people in that organization or 5,000 that you connect to, because now you have the internet. Guess what? There's probably five in England, five in Germany, and 500 somewhere else. So you can create, you live in a borderless society.
Yeah, community.
That's something to learn from the tech world. But I don't want kids today or young students today to not go to these places, save up your money and go to these places, because, you know,
seeing it on the internet and experiencing a real life, two different things.
And you're going to meet the guy in the corner that actually going to set you down and tell you how it really should be done, right?
Yeah. And you know, Marcus, what I can't do via the internet, I can't read that bedtime story for my daughter Maxine that I promised her today that I have to do, that I have to go do right now.
Now go do it!
I gotta hop off this moment into that other moment, brother.
Go and do the real this moment.
We'll be talking soon, brother.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.